It's time for the Fantasy Guru podcast featuring Greg Cosell. It's player and team analysis taken directly from the film room. And now, here's your host, John Hansen.
And we're back with another edition of the Fantasy Guru podcast. I'm John Hansen. It is Thursday, September 1st. 1 week from today, the NFL season kicks off for real. Boatload of games tonight as they wrap up the preseason. We're going to break it down in terms of what happened in the critical third week of the preseason with our guy Greg Cosell. First, another reminder, of course, this is big-time draft season. We're blowing up over at FantasyGuru.com. People are loving the content. By the way, a lot of our picks from May and June in terms of values and sleepers, boom, all coming true, really, most of them. So we're off to a really good start. Check it out at FantasyGuru.com. Also, if you play DFS, we are launching a DFS service, an arm of FantasyGuru.com led by Tommy G and Kevin Adams. That is coming soon, FantasyGuruElite.com. And we like elite. That's a good word. An elite NFL football mind is on the line with us. Once again, Mr. Greg Cosell from NFL Films and the Matchup Show on ESPN. Follow him on Twitter at Greg Cosell. Greg, good morning. How are you?
John, what's happening? We're getting there. Can't wait. Getting tired of watching this preseason tape, although I've grinded through just about all of it.
And you had probably a lot more tape to watch from this past weekend with teams, you know, obviously playing their starters more often than not, but we were just talking about how this has been a little bit of a weird preseason. Some teams are not approaching it like we're used to. Some teams are holding their guys out, Greg.
Yeah, and I think the injury factor is really significant here. And look, it's I think if you have a new coach, perhaps they're going to do some things to try to get a feel. But I think some of these coaches with veteran teams know their personnel pretty well. I think the feeling is we don't want to start the season with guys either banged up or missing significant time.
Let's go through all the games because I think this is kind of an interesting exercise because I actually watched every snap from this past weekend.
And you did?
Yeah.
Wow, good for you.
I've got my – I mean, I may have cut off a couple of games with like 2 minutes to go in the fourth quarter, honestly. But, I mean, I saw 95% of what I needed to see. And I've got takeaways from fantasy, and we'll compare those to your takeaways from studying the All-22, the coach's tape. And then we'll touch on the news and the notes as we move along. So, for example, Greg, we can start with Minnesota. They win the game against San Diego, and a lot of the commentary is a moot point. And boy, I thought Stephon Diggs looked terrific.
Well,
go ahead.
Just
Greg.
A quick point. I know he's obviously not a factor now, but I thought in this preseason I saw a couple of things from Teddy Bridgewater that signified to me that he was going to be an improved player this year in North Turner's system, and I was so saddened when I heard the news. In fact, I had just finished watching Minnesota's offensive tape when the news came down, and I was really, really saddened. I don't know if you've met Teddy Bridgewater. I have not, but I've not heard one bad thing about him. I hear he's a really great kid, and he was really showing signs. You know how I feel about the quarterback position, John, and he was making the kind of turn-it-loose throws in this preseason that are demanded in the NFL, and I was really excited to see him play this season.
Of course, that they wanted him to let it rip. You got a running attack behind you, and the receivers now to do it, and it sure seemed like in year three he was ready to turn it loose a little bit. How did you think their O-line looked? Maybe it's a function of San Diego. I saw Manti Te'o get dominated a couple of times, but I thought the O-line looked better at least.
Yeah, I mean, they played a defense that's not a fast defense, certainly at the linebacker position. You know, I think that their O-line was a little better. Just because I know we want to do a fantasy focus as well, I think a fascinating player in their offense, and I'm wondering now that it's Sean Hill, if he's even a little bit of a bigger factor, is McKinnon. I think McKinnon's a really good player. Now, we know Peterson is going to get his 280, 300 carries. That's not my point. But McKinnon's going to be on the field in third down situations. It wouldn't surprise me with Peterson getting older if McKinnon gets a couple of series here and there. He's a really good player.
No question. I asked Mike Zimmer about him at the combine, and his eyes lit up a little bit. And space, you know, they want to get him in space more. And one way to do that is the passing attack. And obviously you mentioned Sean Hill, who is forced to step up, Greg. But let me just for a second go off on a side note with the Viking quarterback situation. Because if they can get Josh McCown for a three, I would do that. Even with what you said about Teddy, I do feel like, and McCown's been around. You know, I don't know if he's been in Norv's system.
No, but he's I think a quick learner. You go back a couple of years when he, I don't want to use the word mastered, but he clearly learned Mark Trestman's system very quickly and was effective in it. Totally different system, but he learned it. I agree with you. I mean, I don't know what Minnesota's going to do. Hill's certainly a veteran, and he'll play. He'll certainly start the year, but you would think they'll look for a veteran quarterback. It just depends on if the price is too steep.
Not that it matters. It may not, but I do feel like you mentioned McCown being a quick learner. I do feel like if they got McCown, dare I say, Greg, that might be an upgrade for Minnesota compared to Teddy.
Not compared to Teddy.
Okay.
I wouldn't say that. I thought you were going to say compared to Hill. I would not say compared to Teddy. You know, Teddy's in his third year in the same system.
Right,
clearly showed improvement in the preseason. I'm not suggesting Teddy was ready to be a top three quarterback in the league. I don't know if the talent level will ever allow him to be that guy. But he showed clear improvement, and I was kind of excited to see him play once the regular season started.
Now let's talk about the offense without Teddy. You know, Sean Hill is serviceable for sure. And I feel like I feel like he can get the ball to their receivers. But the mobility element, and Teddy's not a running quarterback per se, but his movement in the pocket, as I'm sure you've noted, is pretty darn good. So to me, that's one of the biggest elements that's lost here. Your thoughts on how things change with Sean Hill. I would imagine we're a lot more conservative, and you mentioned Jerick McKinnon, but the lack of mobility, Greg, to me is the killer here in this quarterback situation now.
Well, I think there's no question that Bridgewater has deceptive mobility outside the pocket, and that adds a dimension to his game in the Vikings offense. We don't think of him that way, but it's true. Hill can move. He's older. I wouldn't say he's Teddy Bridgewater, but I think Hill is sort of plays the game, to use the cliche, but I think it's true, with a little bit of a gunslinger attitude. Now, they're going to try to calm that down because I think they'll feel like they can run and play good defense. But I think the reason I mentioned McKinnon is I think you might see a lot more checkdowns. You might see a lot more safe throws, and I think he might even be coached that way.
How good did Diggs look to you on tape?
Real good.
Oh, boy.
Well, we've talked about – I mean, I mentioned Diggs to you last year before the season even started. I liked him coming out of Maryland a lot, and I thought he'd be a quality NFL receiver. And I guess I was surprised at how well he did as a rookie, but I'm not surprised that he's going to turn out to be that guy.
One thing I noted in the game was it seems like Trey Waynes, the former number one pick, is playing well. I don't know if you picked up on that because he was covering Keenan Allen, and he did pretty good job in this game.
Yeah, I imagine they want him to start, you know, opposite Rhodes. I mean, he was a number one pick. So I thought when he came out of Michigan State that he clearly had the skill set to be even a big-time NFL corner. And we know he had issues as a rookie, but he's got talent.
But they're loaded, Greg, because I think Terrence Newman, I think, is still starting. So you got
I know we want to move on, too, but I think the big overlooked element, and you know they're working on this, when they played their base 4-3 defense last year, their run defense was not very good. Mm. They gave up 6 yards per rush on 114 plays when they were in their base 4-3 versus the run. Now, which we'll talk more about this next week when we're matching them up to Tennessee, who's obviously going to run the ball. But I mean, that is sort of an overlooked element of their defense, which, you know, most people assume is really good, but they really struggled stopping the run out of their base 4-3.
I wonder if some of that was Linval Joseph missing some time. But
could be.
I'm surprised.
Could be. I mean, yeah, but that's why I mentioned the number, because I think a lot of people would be surprised.
Thoughts on Melvin Gordon, and I'm sure you saw the play, and Phillip Rivers getting a lot of credit for it, checked into a run play, basically. It was like a run blitz, and I think it was planetary alignment for Melvin Gordon. I mean, really. I mean, and
he
look,
thought he was back at Wisconsin, where no one touches you when you get the ball, and you can run in a straight line for a lot of yards.
Exactly. So we're optimistic about it. Look, it's a positive summer for Melvin Gordon. Probably does really good things to his confidence level. But again, how often is Melvin Gordon going to get a look like that during the regular season?
You know, but I guess I'm expecting him to be better. Yeah. I don't know how much better. I don't think that he hasn't run the ball a lot in the preseason. I don't think he's had 20 carries. He's probably in that range. So it's hard to get a real feel. I wouldn't say that he's looked tremendously better where I feel like, wow, he's poised for a great year. But I think just overall, I think a year of experience as an NFL runner, he'll be better. He's got a skill set. I don't know if he's ultimately a true, you know, grind it inside type runner. I don't think he's that guy,
right. But
I think he'll be a better player. And I think overall, from a fantasy perspective, John, he's going to get the carries. I mean, I don't think he's going to play on third down. Danny Woodhead is about as good as there is playing that role. But I can't imagine that Gordon, unless the team is behind 14-0 every week after two series, I would imagine Gordon is going to get 15, 18 carries a week. Wouldn't you think so?
Especially with Brandon Oliver on IR. They really
yeah.
have no one else. Dremius Smith, I believe, is the number three running back right now in San Diego. One other player I wanted to touch on, and watching him the last 2 weeks, I'm in. Travis Benjamin, I feel like, looked great in that third game. We saw the rocket screen.
Yep.
He is not just a deep threat. Did he pop a little bit to you this past week?
Well, that's what you're going to see, and I think that's because the league has moved in that direction, John. You know, a lot of tunnel screens, jet sweeps, I mean, things like that. I think they do not have an explosive – they didn't have until they signed him an explosive dimension to their offense. I mean, obviously they're hoping Gordon provides that as well, but they certainly didn't from the wide receiver position. As much as you and I both like Keenan Allen, and we know last year he was on his way to a phenomenal year numbers-wise before the injury, but he's not that guy. So Benjamin becomes the explosive weapon, and I think with Mike McCoy and Ken Wisenhunt, they'll find ways to get him the ball, whether it's screens, jet sweeps, you know, motion shifts. I'm not suggesting he's a 90-catch, 1,500-yard guy, but he's going to be a meaningful part of that offense.
Let's go to Houston and Arizona. Just as an overall thought, are you worried at all? Would you be worried at all if you're in a fantasy, the shaky summer? I'm not either.
No, and I know what you're going to ask, and I wouldn't be, because I think Arians is a great game planner, and I would not be worried. Look, I've watched all those games. I mean, Palmer, everybody's still worried about the hangover from last year, and he threw the three picks, which were all fluky in their own way. I wouldn't be worried at all.
Yeah.
Look, it's... Can you sit here and say he's going to throw 35 touchdowns? No one knows the answer to that question. But I don't think Carson Palmer all of a sudden is throwing 12 touchdowns.
He also didn't have Larry Fitzgerald and John Brown last
week. And John Brown is quite, apparently, from what I'm reading, he's got some head injuries. And,
yeah.
You know, they talk about the other Brown, Jaron Brown, but he's not John Brown in terms of skill set. He's a different kind of player.
Well, they do have J.J. Nelson, who's a nice little
deep
threat.
Right. But again, he's you know, you wonder if he can truly fill the John Brown role. I mean, John Brown's not big either, but Nelson's even smaller.
Gotcha. For the Texans, we're worried about the O-line with Nick Martin out for the season and Dwayne Brown, a candidate to start the season on PUP. How did they look? Because it seemed like they did actually play fairly well this past week. I don't know if you saw that.
Oh, I sure did. Absolutely.
Yeah.
I thought their offense looked solid. You know, don't forget, as you basically indicated, they played the entire preseason with backup tackles. And, you know, I thought Osweiler was sharp. I tell you what, we've talked about this every week, John. They've got weapons.
Oh, my God. You know, they're treating Will Fuller. It's as if Will Fuller's in, like, year five. I mean, is that me? I mean, he's just been put on the fast track. I know he dropped the ball, a deep pass, but I feel like the kid is coming through big time.
Well, they've also done the same with Braxton Miller.
Exactly.
Braxton Miller is their slot receiver, and he has been a revelation to me watching him on tape. He runs routes as if he's been doing this for years, which tells me, number one, that he's smart, and two, that he's very receptive to coaching, because he runs routes as if he knows how to run routes. And, you know, you saw a little bit more of Tyler Irvin this week, and I think he's going to be that third down back.
Absolutely.
And he's got some juice to him. You saw that. And I was real excited to see that because, you know, how I felt about him coming out of San Jose State. I thought he could do that in the NFL. So they've got players. And Osweiler showed some good movement in the pocket. So this is an offense that'll be very interesting to watch. And we know what Hopkins is. I mean, Hopkins is a high-level X wideout in this league. So they've got players.
As I keep saying to you on this podcast and the radio, it's like, you know, we're talking Will Fuller. I love what I'm seeing from Braxton Miller. I'm with you on this Tyler Irvin kid. I really like him. I'm very intrigued. And, and by the way, they've got DeAndre Hopkins. I mean, it's like
right.
He's like an afterthought, which is fine because we all know what he can do, but all hinges on this O-line too. And
I mean, theoretically, Hopkins could have a great year and not have the same numbers because they just have more weapons.
Totally agree. He was fed the pill by necessity last year. Let's move on to Jacksonville and Cincinnati, and not much to see here. I don't know how much of the tape you saw. I do think, though, that T.J. Yeldon is flashing a little bit to me. Feels like he's moving a little bit better, Greg. I don't know if you picked up on that on tape.
I watched the tape, and I like Yeldon. You know that how I feel about him as well. I thought that he's a guy, he makes people miss in space. Now, he's not explosive. The thing with him is he's not going to make someone miss and then run 60 yards for a touchdown. He's not that guy. He's an odd kind of back in the sense that he's got real good lateral juice and Zuzu, but he's not purely powerful or naturally explosive. So he's an odd kind of runner, but I like his skill set. And he's also 226 pounds. I don't think it was he's only in his third year, but I don't think it was a great preseason for Blake Bortles. You know, to me, he's a big play down the field thrower, much more than a rhythm precision thrower. And that long delivery sometimes is a factor on timing throws. And I was just, we were talking in our matchup room as we're starting to look ahead to week one and doing our show, that I wonder if he's ever going to be a high percentage passer. He may not be that kind of guy. He may be more of the 58-59% guy that makes big plays.
Gotcha. Well, it is a big chunk offense, so you can make up for some of the inefficiency with with big plays. But, yeah, I hear you, especially in this third game. This was, to me, the shakiest showing thus far for Cincinnati. Boy, this Jeremy Hill-Giovanni Bernard tandem continues to look really good. I thought Hill looked good, Greg, yet again. So these guys, it would behoove them, I think, to lean heavily on these two.
Well, I think we know what they want to do. That's what they wanted to do last year, and Hill just wasn't up to the challenge last year. And I know they talked during the telecast because it was a national game and I watched it, that Hill is a good kid who really understands that he did not perform last year and has worked very hard. I mean, I think last year with Hugh Jackson, they wanted it to be Hill's offense to start, and I'm sure that with Sampisi, they would like the same thing to happen.
Yeah, no question. I've had Hill on the radio. I agree. I think he's a very good kid, and he's smart football kid, too. He had a lot of good insight into the game as well when I interviewed him. I believe Mr. Kaplan and I interviewed him his rookie season. Let's move on. Not much else going on here otherwise. I mean, it's been a pretty solid summer for Andy Dalton. Tyler Boyd, we talked about ad nauseum this year. They are thin at receiver. They just cut Tate. So they're very thin at receiver, actually. And, of course, we don't have the Tylers. Croft and Eifert still out.
No.
And Eifert may miss a little while here.
So does that mean that right now James Wright will be their number three?
Yeah, that's the kid that's hung around here. And, yeah, I think he looks like the number
three. Because I think he was at LSU as a backup when they had Beckham and Landry. So, I mean, that doesn't mean he can't play because those guys are pretty darn good. But, I mean, you know, he's played, and maybe he's the number three. He's a tall, lanky kid. He's got some movement ability.
Actually, you know who I think it might be? I think it might be Cody Core, the rookie, who's playing
you know,
a lot.
I like that kid. He was the other receiver, if I'm not mistaken, opposite. Was he at Ole Miss or Mississippi State? I can't remember. I think he might have been the other receiver opposite Treadwell, but
Ole
I liked
Miss.
Him.
Yeah, he's Ole Miss.
Yeah,
yep.
He was opposite Treadwell.
Yes.
And I liked that kid. He's a really good-sized kid, and he's got speed, moves well. I mean, he was a kid who, you know, I think maybe he was like a sixth-round pick, and I thought the talent level, to me, was better than that. But, you know, I always understand when guys get drafted where they do. But I'm not surprised, let's put it that way, if he makes the team and plays significant snaps.
Yeah, he's out there. I remember seeing him out there pretty early in the game, actually. Let's move on to Baltimore and Detroit. Any takeaways from the Lion offense? That has been a little underwhelming. I think I mentioned.
I would agree. Yeah. I would agree. But, you know, they're an offense to me, and it's. We were talking about this before we started. One of those teams that I think is not really pushing it out a lot in the preseason. You know, I think with Cooter there as the OC, and he was there last year, I think they're I don't want to say holding back, but I don't think you're seeing what they're going to do when the regular season starts. So I'm being totally honest, I don't have a great feel for them in the preseason because I really don't think that's what you're going to see when the regular season starts.
They're talking about them using their running game quite a bit, and Zach Zenner is going to be the power interior guy. Riddick may get a few more carries. He did pop off a little bit of a longer run here, but really Amir Abdullah is going to carry the load here. Any takeaways there? He did have, I don't know if you noticed, he did have a 10-yard touchdown run called back, likely sprung free due to a holding, but I thought he showed juice for sure.
Look, they've got weapons, and we've seen through the preseason Stafford make some Stafford throws. I mean, I think it was the week before when he hit Marvin Jones in the outside void on a 32-yard throw that, you know, most quarterbacks wouldn't even attempt to make that throw. So, they're working in some new people, but I didn't really get the feeling watching them this preseason that this was the offense we'll see once the season starts.
I just feel in Detroit that the difference – between them being a pretty good offense, you know, better than good, but not great, and just kind of merely good or worse, is Ebron. I just feel like that's the key, because, you know,
and he's getting to the point where he's going. This is his third year, John, as you well know, and he's getting to the point where he's going to have to produce.
He's going to have to.
First of all, he can't stay on the field, which in the NFL it's about availability and durability, and. Look, within the context of that offense, he doesn't need 85 catches, but he's got to be on the field and produce. You know, he's got speed and big playability. They'd be thrilled if he caught 50 balls for 8 touchdowns and averaged 14 yards a catch, but, you know, he's got to produce.
He really is their most explosive weapon at receiver. I mean, he's more explosive to me than Marvin Jones, for example.
Yeah, I mean, if you're looking, given his position and given how he could theoretically be deployed within the context of their offense, yes.
Exactly.
But, you know, right now, we don't even know what he is.
Yeah. In Baltimore, we're still kind of figuring this all out.
I watched Joey Flacco. I just wanted to see him, you know, go. Yeah. And they just wanted him to get comfortable. It was all the quick timing, five-step stuff, you know, get rid of the football. They wanted him to get completions and feel comfortable being on a field. So, I mean, you know, granted, it's Mark Trestman, so we always say he can throw the deep ball. Trestman's offense isn't as deep ball-oriented as some Flacco's been in prior to that. So, but I mean, they just wanted to get him comfortable. Wanted to get him in rhythm.
I thought he looked a little slow, a little sluggish in the dropbacks,
yep.
Which, to be fair, is, you know, first game back. But you notice that, too?
Well, it's funny you say that. I type Flacco is definitely rusty, did not turn loose on some easy reads that were clearly defined. But, I mean, you know, that's the first game he played.
Yeah.
But I don't think he's a concern of ours regarding their offense.
By the way, we took the, you know, the tips from you and the thoughts from you. We do a lot of work with you in the off season in terms of, you know, your studying of the tape, and we use that and our own thoughts and all that, and we kind of come up with a whole big picture consensus, and we agreed with the Kenneth Dixon analysis, because we loved Kenneth Dixon. We loved
he looked good in this game, by the way.
That's where I'm getting to. We love the lateral agility. We love the receiving work. I mean, sensational receiver out of the backfield. But we had questions like you about his interior power, if you will. Can he break tackles? Can he drag defenders and all that? And did you see the run where he drug 8 guys for like 10 yards?
Well, it's funny because he did that in college. The only reason I had a question is because of his size. You know, I mean, he's not a powerfully built kid. You know, you don't look at him. You know, he's not built like, let's say, Ezekiel Elliott. He's not that kind of, you know. So, but I loved Kenneth Dixon. I told you that.
Yep.
And I thought he was a great pick for them. And it'll be very interesting because he played a lot in this game with the ones. And I think that, you know, if he's healthy, and I know he's been battling some injuries, which is always a concern with a smaller guy, but he gives them, I think he gives them a lot.
You know, he's got the sprained knee. He could actually be not even relevant for the first month of the season, but this is more for down the road. I know it's a small sample, but has he answered some of those questions about his power in the NFL? To me, and that game last weekend, my goodness, he certainly did, but, you know, only a few touches.
Well, if he's a complimentary player, I think the questions are answered, because he's not going to be asked to carry 20 times a game.
Yeah.
If he's a compliment, he does run hard inside. See, that's the thing. He runs hard.
Yes.
I mean, he's not a bounce guy. He's not looking to get away from the traffic. He will run hard. He just can't do that 20 times a game in the NFL, but I don't think he's seen that way by the Ravens. So I think once he's healthy, assuming he can pick up where he left off, he'll be a factor in their offense.
Looks like Terrence West will be very involved early on, along with Forsett and Buck Allen. You know, he can be, you know, the receiving
pretty deep,
threat.
Pretty deep at that position.
Oh, very deep, very deep. Let's move on to the Eagles and the Colts and Mr. Preseason Sam Bradford playing well. But, you know, we did like the way they utilized Josh Huff. It's like, was that so hard, guys? I mean, he's not. I don't think he's going to be a prolific receiver out of the backfield, but why can't he be what Tavon Austin has been or was last year for the Rams?
Well, it's a quick rhythm pass game. And you know, it's funny because it's similar to the Chiefs, obviously. And I watched the game both on TV and on tape. And my thought process is very simplistic, of course, but just to make a point, is that he makes a lot of the throws that Alex Smith doesn't make. You know, the ball comes out. Sam is very comfortable in a quick rhythm pass game because I don't think at his core Sam is a drive it down the field guy.
Right.
I think that has to be set up for him. I don't think he's the kind of guy that's just going to drive it. Not because he can't. He's got the arm to do it, but I think he's most comfortable in kind of that quick rhythm pass game, and that's what they ran. So, I mean, obviously they played the Colts, who I think had seven players who were not starters, so it's not a matter of the numbers. I'm talking about the philosophy of the offense.
What'd you think of Wendell Smallwood, the rookie who made his preseason debut?
You know, I'm very intrigued by that kid. I think he's got a very interesting skill set, and I don't know what they plan on doing. I mean, he is a rookie, and I don't know Doug Peterson's overall philosophy on rookies. You know, some coaches don't like to put him out there right away. I mean, Ryan Matthews, I thought, looked very good on the two or three runs that he had, whatever the number was. I think he'd ultimately be their number one back. I think Kenyon Bonner's had a very good preseason and training camp, and we know that Darren Sproles will be used, so I'm not sure what Smallwood is this year.
Yeah.
He would probably have to replace Bonner, because you know, or unless Matthews gets hurt, that changes the whole equation. But I don't think he's replacing Matthews as the number one back if Matthews is healthy.
Doriel Green Beckham with the touchdown. We'll see a lot of 50-50 jump balls to him, likely in the end zone. One guy that fantasy people who are drafting now and will be drafting may not be, you know, on the tip of the tongue, but I think is going to be their number one, is Jordan Matthews. I mean, right now, I mean, Jordan Matthews is kind of flying under the radar if healthy. I mean, he's going to get his in this offense.
Without question. And I think in this style of offense, he will put up numbers, you know, and he'll have a very significant role. And, you know, Doriel Green Beckham to me is the fascinating guy because, look, the Eagles need receivers. We saw them, you know, make some cuts already, Givens and Randall. And in an ideal world, I would think they'd want Green Beckham and Aguilar to be the starters on the outside. And, that's what I think will happen. Now, the other guy who I think is fascinating in the context of this offense is Trey Burton, because I think there's a lot of two tight end sets and three tight end sets in this offense.
Yeah, I think that's a little bit of a concern for Zach Ertz. I mean, I'm not sure he's going to get fed the rock, but, you know, he's clearly their guy, no question about it. But, yeah, it's not great when you've got Selleck and Burton also on the field. In Indy, you know, the vibes are a little shaky here, let's be honest about it.
O-line issues again.
And we give credit to the Eagle D, though, because that's a pretty nasty front seven, for sure.
Well, it's funny you say that, because watching the tape, the Eagles' front group did a really good job in terms of pass rush. Their back group, there were receivers running free the entire game. If Luck had time to throw, he would have thrown for 300 yards in the first half.
Wow.
There were receivers running free the entire – Ron Brooks had a really hard time in the slot. And no, it was that's why I love watching the tape, because I'm sitting here watching it and I'm going, oh my God, these guys are just they're open all the time.
Oh wow, that's a good nugget there. Who are they playing week one, by the way? I don't even know.
The Colts?
No, what? The Eagles.
Who are the Eagles? Eagles play Cleveland week one.
Oh, never mind.
Which is not a good matchup, you know, for Cleveland. I'm not sure anybody's a good matchup for Cleveland right now, but that really struck me. But the Eagles front group, I thought Brandon Graham looked really good. Vinnie Curry I think Vinnie Curry's going to thrive in this system.
Moncrief really, really, to me, is jumping off the page a little bit this summer. Your thoughts on Moncrief?
I mean, he's predominantly their X, their weak side receiver to the boundary, but they line up in a lot of different sets, 2-by-1, 3-by-1, different receivers. Hilton is a movement guy. I mean, they've got speed. They've got, you know, Moncrief, who's 225. If they can protect, and we've been seeing this for years with the Colts, I think they have an opportunity to put up some points and yards. I mean, they've got players.
Just looks like Moncrief is ready. You know, year three, he's ready to show us the best he has to offer, which we think is quite a bit. Denver and St. Louis, I actually thought Trevor Siemian looked like a professional quarterback. I thought he was decent. I thought he was.
Well, so did Gary Kubiak.
Did he?
Well, he's going to start him.
Yeah, exactly. Exactly. But, you know, I mean, I don't know what kind of thoughts you have. I thought Demaryius Thomas made a great catch.
He sure did.
He had another one that you likely saw that was out of bounds.
Yeah.
That didn't show up. But he made two spectacular catches after dropping a five-yarder early in the game.
I mean, I thought the key thing from Kubiak's perspective, John, was after he threw the interception, Siemian, which was just an underthrown fade. It wasn't a bad read. It was just an underthrown fade route to Latimer.
Yeah.
When they started the next series, the first four plays were all called passes. And I think Kubiak did that intentionally because I think he wanted to see how Siemian would react. And they had three straight completions and a defensive PI. And I think, and again, I'm not just saying that's the reason he's the starter, but I think that was done intentionally because you want to see how a young quarterback comes back after a pick like that. Now, Siemian, to me, and we've discussed him, he's most comfortable as a drop-back rhythm passer. He's got a quick, compact delivery. He's got short to intermediate arm strength. He profiles as a complementary piece. You know, we were talking in our matchup room. I could easily see Kubiak looking at Siemian and seeing a young Matt Schaub kind of quarterback, you know, a piece, because that's what Schaub was. And then, you know, he put up great numbers being that guy, and he improved. But initially, that's what Schaub was. He's a piece.
Absolutely see that comparison. And I absolutely think C.J. Anderson, by the way, looks terrific this summer.
Yeah, I agree. Does he look a little quicker to you?
Absolutely.
Yeah.
Yeah. I love it. You know, the low center of gravity, some natural power, some lateral agility, good receiver out of the backfield. Now, I saw, you know, Devontae Booker, the rookie, was out there early, but didn't do really all that much. So it's
But I think, I mean, again, we don't know until the season starts, but maybe if he's the number two, I think he will get carries because I don't think Anderson is going to get 25 carries a game, and they want to run the ball. So I think if Booker does turn out to be the number two, and we technically won't know that because Hillman's a veteran, then Booker could get 7, 8, 9 carries a game.
Sure, sure, no question. And he's the guy, if you want to protect your investment of Anderson, the handcuff, if you will. But we'll see if Hillman makes the team. There's a lot of speculation he won't, but he did have a touchdown run later in the game that was pretty nice. And, you know, he does have, you know, he does profile as a nice complement. You know, but last year Kubiak was using him as more than a compliment, and that was a mistake. So we'll see if he makes it.
Well, and that's why they drafted Booker where they did. I don't think they see Hillman as a number two back.
Right, right. Virgil Green looking pretty good here. Is, you know, I'm thinking get the cape out, captain checkdown for Trevor Siemian. I can see Virgil Green catching like 60 balls this year.
Well, they won't be unhappy if Siemian checks it down. They're going to play to their run game and their defense.
Yep. For the Rams, not much going on here.
It's Case Keenum. We know it's Case Keenum.
For what it's worth, I thought Case Keenum wasn't as bad as some thought. You know, if you look at the stats, it was ugly. But, you know,
I watched the tape. I mean, that's a really hard defense to play against in their O-line. The Rams, that is still a big question. I mean, their two tackles, Robinson and Saffold. Now, granted, they were playing against – Ware didn't play, but Miller did, obviously. And Shane Ray looks like he's really coming on, by the way. But Sir Robinson and Saffold, a big question for the Rams is going to be the ability of those two tackles to pass protect 101. That's going to be a question. We're going to have to see how that goes. But Keenum, he's a quick rhythm thrower. They want to run the ball. They want to be able to keep Keenum in a situation where they can do the quick game, get the ball out, define it for him, you know. And I think Keenum can do that if all else works. If all else doesn't work, then you're in a little different situation.
Tennessee and Oakland, boy, I feel good about the receiving core. I mean, I love this Tajay Sharp kid. I actually thought Andre Johnson, Greg, looked pretty good compared to last year.
Yeah, I mean, obviously his long play was a bust, you know, but hey, that happens in the NFL. I mean, right now, I think Johnson may be a starter with Tajay Sharp. I mean, I'm not sure exactly how that's going to play out, but clearly Johnson is among their top three.
He's moving better.
He's going to play.
I mean, remember last September, he just wasn't moving well. I think he's moving better right now than he did last September.
Possible, and he's a great guy, and he may have spent the off season really getting in phenomenal shape because he's that kind of guy. So, but he's clearly among their top three right now, John. So he's getting snaps, whether it's 45 or 60, he's getting snaps.
Sharp, Johnson, Matthews, Wright. I mean, not a lot of explosiveness. Plus Delaney, there are clearly weapons for Mariota to matriculate the ball down the field when they do
without
throw.
Question. And they're a scheme offense. I mean, their run game at its core is basic, but they are incredibly multiple with their personnel and formations, and that's the way that Malarkey approaches. He's always been that guy. So, you know, you could argue it's window dressing, but it has an impact on the defense. But we know how they're going to play, John. We know exactly how they're going to play.
And they're going to run the ball. And I've been pretty high on Murray all year. And, boy, he looks good, Greg. This yet again, I mean, this is 3 weeks in a row. To me, DeMarco Murray looks outstanding.
This offense is built for him. It's his kind of run game. And the thing that he's done well through the preseason is he's made unblocked defenders miss.
Yep.
Because if you block well with their style of run game, you get him on an unblocked defender, a safety or a corner, depending on the play. And he's done a good job of making those guys miss.
Can we look at this sample size and come to the conclusion that he's a good fit for this running game?
He's a great fit,
yeah.
As is Derrick Henry. Now, we don't know what the breakdown will be. My sense is it's going to be Murray's offense, which doesn't mean that Henry won't play,
right.
But I don't think it's going to be a case where Murray's two series, Henry one. I think it's Murray's offense. Henry will play, but Henry's not getting 15 carries a week.
I agree. That's where I'm at. And, you know, I'm studying the pass pro. I notice Murray stymie someone in pass pro early in the game, and then I watched Derrick Henry, his first opportunity, he did flub.
And I think this is a good way to enhance and encourage Mariota's development. I mean, a lot of people might think, oh, put him in the gun, let him run around. I think if you put him in a fully dimensional offense, get him under center, get him to play in the NFL game, you know, I think he'll then, as he progresses, then you can start adding those things. It's hard after 3 or 4 years then to teach a guy how to be a pocket player and how to play quarterback the NFL. And that's what's happening with RG3. It's hard to teach that, you know, if you're not starting with that. And I think Malarkey's doing absolutely the right thing.
For the Raiders, DeAndre Washington, again, looked terrific. We don't
and
know.
And he's a guy, I remember telling you about him at draft time. You know, I mean, I think he's going to be look, I don't know if he's going to – let's put this, I don't know how many carries he's going to take away from Murray as a base offense runner, but he's going to be a part of this offense.
He's not an easy call because he's not a burner, but his movement is outstanding, pretty dynamic. But I think one of the takeaways is he looks very comfortable catching the ball out of the backfield.
Without question. And he's got some juice to him.
Amari Cooper looked terrific, Greg. I mean, this kid is...
I don't think we're worried about Amari Cooper.
He's
a pretty good receiver.
I'm a little worried about Crabtree. I mean, it's not for me. I mean, he had that nice 45-yard reception down the sideline, but I also noticed the defender was in his back pocket. So,
yeah, we talked about that. I mean, yeah. I think Crabtree at times struggles against man coverage, and I think they're going to have to work through that with their concepts, particularly on third down.
Let's go on to the Giants and the Jets, and not a lot going on here. I mean, I've learned to just almost ignore the Giants in the preseason because
you have to. It's sometimes I watch six plays of the Giants and I go, why am I even watching this? I mean, you know, I'm being honest with you. I mean, you know, it's like, okay, you know, and then they'll start the regular season and Eli will throw for 350.
Exactly.
I mean, that happens. It seems like that happens every year.
Exactly. Yeah. So I'm like, whatever. No one got hurt. Okay, good. Let's move on. Week one. Jets, not a lot going on here. Any thoughts on what you saw from Forte?
Just the fact of Forte's versatility. I mean, he lined up, you know, detached from the formation. I think he's done that his whole career. The Jets will do that. The Jets are a high-percentage empty offense. 20% of Fitzpatrick's throws last year came out of empty. They're continued to do that in the preseason. In fact, Decker's touchdown came out of empty. So that's something. And the reason I mention that is because of Forte, because he can line up detached and be a factor in the pass game.
You're listening to the Fantasy Guru Podcast. I'm John Hansen, and he is Greg Cosell, and we're talking football. Football, it's your passion. You know all the players, the teams, their strengths, their weaknesses. Now put that knowledge to the test and play for your shot at $1 million top prize on DraftKings.com. It's just part of the $5 million in total prizes they're doling out in this week one contest. DraftKings.com is the destination for 1 week fantasy football. 1 week means no season long commitments. Play whenever you want with the players you want. Just pick your contest, draft your players, and follow your team live. Renew old rivalries by challenging friends and family in a private league to prove you're the superior GM, or join an existing league and go head to head with friends, coworkers, and fantasy players from all over the country. Hurry to DraftKings.com now to choose your players, and you could seriously win cash in week one. Use the code GURU and play for free with your first deposit. That's the code GURU to play for free with for your share of the $5 million in total prizes in this week one contest, only at DraftKings.com. DraftKings.com. Eligibility restrictions may apply. See website for details. Back to the podcast here. Gearing up for week one. Preseason closes out tonight, and we're up to KC and Chicago, and looking good here. Now, maybe not for Jamaal Charles, who we've moved down, and there's talk of committee. But you know what? I'm not worried about it, because I figured that Jamaal Charles wasn't getting more than 15, 16 touches a game anyway. So that said, that's a committee almost, because this team wants to give their running backs 30-plus touches.
And look, Ware is, you know, he's looks like he'll be the guy. I mean, he's an aggressive downhill runner. He's got some power. He's an inside runner. We saw him last year. He fights for every yard. I mean, he's a workmanlike back, and we've seen that they've been able to be successful with a workmanlike back with the way they play. The guy who I'm most intrigued by in this offense is the tight end Demetrius Harris, and I don't know your feeling about him,
but the
Chiefs play a lot of 12 personnel, and you know, look, they lined him up at X ISO this past week, and he caught a 19-yard sort of a quick bang 8 throw. He was X ISO, you know, so. I noticed him last year. He didn't catch many balls, but I noticed the athleticism, and clearly they've been using him more this preseason. I find him to be a fascinating and intriguing player to watch as we go forward.
Just another piece in this offense, and that's kind of my takeaway, is they've got more pieces than ever, and I do think they like Harris. I actually asked GM John Dorsey about Harris at the Combine, and that was 2015, so it was like 18 months ago, and I remember thinking, I bet you John Dorsey didn't wake up this morning and expect to be asked about Demetrius Harris. He didn't think he'd be asked questions by a fantasy guy, though, which I am, and I did ask him, and he does like him quite a bit. Obviously, that's why they grabbed him. So he is someone to look at. But otherwise, I mean, Jeremy Maclin looks good. I mean, they're ready for week one in KC, Greg. I mean, they are ready to go.
I would agree. I mean, they're going to play the way they – it's not going to be any different, John.
Yep.
You know, I will say one thing. The thing that I know you factor it in. I don't think it's talked about a lot. I think that Smith's scrambling ability has become a really important part of their third down offense. It's an important dimension. Smith scrambles for first downs. I mean, he gains yards.
No question about it. And that 25 yards rushing in this game, he moved well. He actually is pretty impressive as a runner. In Chicago, things aren't looking wonderful here.
Well, and they only got 18 snaps in the first half because they couldn't get off the field on defense. I mean, I'm having a tough time getting a read on their offense, to be totally honest with you. So I don't have anything brilliant to say right now, because I just don't feel like I've got a grasp through the preseason.
Well, we can say that Kevin White does not look ready for prime time. Now, maybe they're hiding him, but he has not done much in the preseason. It's been all Jeffrey the last couple of games. I did see, for what it's worth, a nice 10-yard run from Jeremy Langford, who clearly is the guy.
Yeah, and he's looked good. I mean, you know, again, can he be the guy if they want to give him the ball 20 times? Can he be that guy? Only time will tell. But I think he's got pretty good ability.
Washington-Buffalo. I thought the Redskin offense was a little uneven with Kirk Cousins, but you still get the 3 touchdowns. They clearly have weapons. I thought Deshaun, Greg, looked terrific.
Yep. No, he did. They got weapons, John. They got weapons.
He seems primed for a real good year. It is a contract year for him, and I think that means something in his case. I feel like he's like you know, just flying below the radar here, and Deshaun wants to kind of explode when the regular season kicks off. They've got depth at receiver, too, Greg. Ryan Grant's a pretty good player, actually.
I can tell you for a fact, too, that Jay Gruden loves Josh Doctson. He cannot wait till he gets healthy. He is going to play, and that's probably at the expense of Grant, but they love Josh Doctson.
And I keep talking him up because people, they don't – it's things change quickly. 2 years ago, right around now, you could have done a draft and gotten Odell Beckham Jr. in the 13th round, you know, 150 picks in. He wasn't getting drafted. And the same thing with Josh Doctson, because he's just out of sight, out of mind. And I know he may not immediately start, but, you know, let's say it's November and he's ready to go and Deshaun gets hurt. Boom. I think Josh Doctson immediately steps in, potentially as their number one, other than
Jordan. No, I'm just telling you how the coaching staff feels. So, you know, when he gets healthy, and I don't think it's a bad injury, I mean, they feel really good about it. And they feel he can line up both outside and inside and be very effective.
Any thoughts on undrafted free agent Rob Kelly?
I watched him, you know. I mean, he showed some short area quickness, cutting ability. He's got good size to run inside. I mean, I think if he's your complement, which ultimately that's what they want, he can probably do that. I mean, we know last night, I don't think it means much. They had another guy, Brown, who's
Matt
a
Brown.
Former Florida kid, yeah, who rushed for a lot of yards. I mean, I know they played in a driving rainstorm, so, you know, in all honesty, I'm not going to watch that tape. But I don't know. I guess Kelly's going to be their number two right now.
Mac Brown looked pretty good, though. I mean, maybe it was against backups, but he showed an ability to make people miss.
I know he had a long run, too.
Yeah, some explosiveness.
Yeah.
I actually kind of like him a little bit more than Kelly, but it seems like the Redskins like Kelly. But it looks like it'll be Matt Jones, Chris Thompson, Rob Kelly, and I think Mac Brown's going to make this club now with Keith Marshall dealing with that injury. And, you know, we'll see about Jones. I mean, what else can we say? It's still his for the taking. In Buffalo, not much to take out of here. Greg, this is a team that did not approach the third preseason game like we're used to.
No, and that's why I don't know what to say other than what we already know. I mean, it's you know,
yeah.
They didn't really do anything.
Exactly. So we'll move on and we'll look at New England and Carolina. How about this Chris Hogan, man? I'm telling you, I just have a feeling, and I have from day one with this kid, that he's going to be really impactful. I mean, I don't know what that means in terms of fantasy. Maybe only, you know, 700 yards and 5-6 touchdowns. But that's a big number right there, Greg. I can see him getting there.
It's very possible. You know, my bigger concern, and I can't wait for week one, because I don't think Jimmy Garoppolo's had a very good preseason at all.
Yeah.
And I've probably watched all his snaps multiple times just because he's such an important figure right now as we start this NFL season. And I cannot wait to see how Bill Belichick, you know, as smart as they come, obviously, and a lot smarter than I am, I can't wait to see how they play offense against Arizona in that Sunday night game week one, because Garoppolo has really had a hard time. I mean, he's had a couple of plays and that's it. And other than that, he's been a beat slow with everything. He's just not looked very good.
Not a good sign in year number three for Garoppolo, who, by the way, Greg, has targeted running backs or fullbacks on 27.5% of his throws compared to Brady last year at 18%. So I'm thinking James White's catching like 6 balls a week. He looks good.
Well, yeah, no, he's that guy. I mean, clearly.
Yeah.
So we'll see what happens. I mean, it's hard to know right now. I mean, I just – with Belichick, you never know anyway, and I'm so anxious to see what he's going to do.
Yep. Yeah, a little word about Julian Edelman with Garoppolo plus the second tight end, Martellus Bennett, plus Chris Hogan. I think they'd be wise to maybe pull back a little bit and not feed him the ball. I know it's Brady and he wants to throw to his guy, but – you know, I just don't know if he's the days of him on being on pace to at least catch 100-plus balls. I don't know if that's – I think that ship may have sailed, but we'll see. I think Chris Hogan is definitely going to be a factor. For the Panthers, not a great day for Cam. I throw it away. I'm not really worried about it. I did think, by the way, just for what it's worth, Jonathan Stewart ripped off a nice 23-yard run where I was like, okay, he's still moving pretty well.
Yeah, I mean, it was inside zone out of the shotgun, and he stayed front side because the defense flowed, and he looked good on that run. It's interesting about Cam. I mean, I thought until this preseason game, he looked really, really comfortable, just like a veteran quarterback who's a really good player. And in this game, there were a lot of the old traits, and obviously it's preseason, so he's an interesting guy because I've talked to some people who – it's not that they don't think he's a really good player, but they wouldn't be surprised if he's not quite as good this year as he was last year. I've heard that from some people. And, again, we don't know that, but this performance was more like the Cam of 2-3 years ago. He was incredibly scattershot, wild high. He didn't look very good. He made some misreads, but we'll see. I mean, last year he was terrific. So, and that's, you wait for the regular season now.
Yeah, and I've said that, Greg. I'm on record, and it's just weird. It's the nature of statistics in the NFL. It's like last year we all kind of lost hope, and he was amazing. So it's like it only makes sense that, okay, he's going to even do better because he's got Funchess who's coming on, he's got Benjamin back, but it's just the nature of football sometimes that the opposite happens. So I agree. I don't think he's going to put up the numbers that he did last year. Maybe, I don't know what the problem is. Maybe he starts forcing balls to Benjamin. I don't know how or what, but I still have him at one to quarterback, but I think for fantasy, there's no.
And don't forget, yeah, they're a schemed offense with their run game, and they're not going to ask him to run in the preseason. So that element, that dimension, which is so important to them, they don't do that in the preseason because why would you expose him to shots? So, we'll see when the regular season starts.
Yeah, he threw 35 touchdowns. I got him with like 29. I think that's a great.
Right.
I still think that's a great number. He ain't throwing 35 again, I'll tell you that right now. Tampa and Cleveland, I thought this was an grand. Again, the Browns' defense is terrible, but I thought Jameis looked really good.
He did.
I thought Mike Evans looked outstanding, Greg.
Look, Evans was a high pick. He's a big, big receiver. The only thing he lacks would probably be explosiveness, although he can get vertical because of his size and stride length. But I thought that Cam looked very, very good in this game. And, the thing that has really stood out to me with Cam, he's actually got very good functional movement. He can avoid the rush, and he can make throws off movement. And, look, I talked to Jaws, and he was down for 3 days when Tampa and Jacksonville had their joint practices before that preseason game.
Yeah.
And he said he almost didn't recognize Jameis. He said he clearly looks, he looks cut. He looks thin. I mean, so he took this offseason very seriously, and I'm so happy to see that.
Absolutely. No question. He's very svelte, if you will. I kind of mentioned Evans because he had those problems with drops last year, and that was worse. But I thought his hands were great in this game. He was snatching that ball.
Well, he made the touchdown catch. He snatched that. That was really nice because he had to turn his body, and he only could catch it using his hands, and he did a really good job.
And Vincent Jackson was busy, and I think looked good as well.
That guy's had one hell of an NFL career, John. I mean, he's not going to be in the Hall of Fame or anything like that, but that guy's had one hell of an NFL career.
I remember you telling
us. I loved him.
10 years ago.
He came out the same year as, remember, Mike Williams from USC, who was the 10th pick in the draft, I believe, by our good buddy Matt Millen with Detroit.
Yeah.
And I believe from tape study that Vincent Jackson was the better receiver, and I think he was a second or third round pick. I can't remember. But I loved Vincent Jackson right from the time he came out, I believe, of Northern Colorado.
Absolutely. That was a decade ago, and you pumped him up, and a lot of our subscribers got him in their keeper leagues. Speaking of, you mentioned Jaws. Is he still on cloud nine from the Philadelphia Soul?
Oh, yeah, of course. They had a big rally yesterday at City Hall. And actually, as you've probably seen, John, it's going to be announced today at noon, so I'm not speaking out of school because it's already been out there. Jaws was very instrumental in getting the NFL draft, which will be in Philadelphia next year.
Oh, nice.
This year. Yeah.
That's our backyard. I love it. I live 9 miles. I live 9 miles from Center City, so I'm fired up. I'll be there. You'll be there. Well, it's going to be awesome. It's going to be great. And Jaws, he's been with the Soul for a while because I'll tell you exactly how I know this. Because I was doing television work at NFL Network at Films with Kaplan,
It was like 2002, and you guys worked together.
Yes, it was 03 on the
03,
NFL.
Okay,
yes.
Yeah, I remember. I remember. I've been here for – hey, I'm going into my 37th season, John, at film, so I remember.
It's impressive because you started when you were nine, and that's
– Five. That's hey, a good – five. Yeah, don't age me.
Right. But the reason I remember it is because I was in a very long room, and Jaws came in with a soul football. He was all fired up, so he had just gotten the team then. And I was way across the room. He threw a dart to me. I was like, "What are you doing?" We're indoors. You're throwing. Of course, I have good hands, Greg. So I nailed it.
Of course.
You know, right with the hands, pulled it in, and Jaws was impressed. But he threw a 50-mile-an-hour ball to me indoors. All right. So the Browns. That's where we are. I don't know. Go ahead.
A very bad performance overall offensively. RG3 was not good. A lot of the negatives that have always been there showed up again. So this was problematic.
Yeah.
And I think you're going to see Hugh Jackson have to do a lot of things in terms of gimmicks, tricks, plays that hopefully can gain some chunk yards that fool and deceive the defense, which, of course, he has those things in his playbook. But this was not a good performance for RG3 or the offense.
And you want to say people want to be box score analysts and say, oh, Josh Gordon is back, and not so sure about that. He did the big plays against Brent Grimes. He had two big plays. You know, Brent Grimes had good coverage on one and bad on the other. So I'm not ready to say Gordon's back. But, I mean, it was certainly a promising that he made a couple of plays.
Oh, yeah.
You know, Crowell ran hard. He's going to get the ball. All right, let's move on to Pittsburgh and New Orleans. And, you know, I guess we take it with a grain of salt because it was the Saint defense, but I thought Le'Veon Bell looked really good. Our guy Jesse James, who were pumping up a little bit, flashed a little bit. You know, I'm not sure they're ready for prime time, but, you know, their offense did look good against the Saints.
Yeah, and that quarterback's not bad either on Pittsburgh, by the way.
Right. So
I mean, he's just at the point he looks really comfortable. It's an offense with a lot of weapons. I'm real anxious because of their overall offense. If this Eli Rogers starts, I mean, he's the slot guy because he has the size of a slot guy at 5'10", 187. But, you know, within the context of this offense, guys catch balls. So I'm anxious to see what he does.
Well, if he starts, then Sammy Coates is now a backup, because to me that's Wheaton on the outside. And by the way, Wheaton did have a nice catch down the sideline, I thought.
You know, and it'll be interesting to see what they do, because Wheaton last year played inside quite a bit because of Martavis Bryant and had a lot of big plays from the inside. Now, if Rodgers is the slot guy, then Wheaton has to move outside. But Wheaton came into this league as a draft choice who played in a pro-style offense at Oregon State and was an outside receiver and looked like that's what he could be in the NFL.
Yes, but it's a little worrisome that he'll likely have to line up outside. I'm still a little skeptical about that, because, and I think that they have to do this because Sammy Coates has been very sloppy and inconsistent. So you look at last year's production with Wheaton, as you said, a lot of that came out of the slot. Well, he may not be in the slot. So,
well, I will tell you this, John, and then we can move on. If they line up, Brown moves around a lot, but if he plays X,
okay,
and Rodgers is going to play the slot in 3-by-1,
yeah,
where, you know, and Wheaton's going to be the Z, you know, essentially outside of Rodgers on the two receiver side or the three receiver side.
Yeah.
He's going to get a lot of one-on-one opportunities.
Okay.
So he's going to have opportunities.
He's going to have to do it, though. It's been, you know, rare that we've seen
right.
him make the big catch.
But
down
he can
the field.
Run. I mean, this yeah. team has a lot of speed on the field. Boy, they yeah. stretch the field vertically a lot. I mean, they're a matchup-based pass game, not a high concept pass game. They're matchup-based.
Bottom line, though, I think the loss of Martavis Bryant is going to be felt here. I mean, that's
I would agree, because that guy, for what he is, he's really good at that.
For New Orleans, now let me see if you notice this one, because the box score analysts are going to say that Kobe Fleener has not done a damn thing, but there was a play in which Breeze hit Fleener running down the seam for about 30 yards. Fleener took a big hit, held on. I thought that was at least encouraging. I don't know if you picked up
yep.
on that. Did you see that?
Yeah, I did. I watched the tape.
Yeah. Yeah.
The guy who I think is really interesting on this offense, and, you know, his numbers were good last year, and he's not talked about at all because of Fleener, because they drafted Mike Thomas. But Willie Snead is I mean, I think Drew probably feels pretty comfortable throwing it to this kid. And, you know, he made a great catch in the end zone. But, you know, Snead's going to catch balls in this offense.
No question. We give him love. I mean, he's to me. I mean, I'm sold. You know, he's a good football player and reliable. Why wouldn't Breeze want to throw to
him? That's a good word. I think Breeze sees him the same way.
Yeah. Any thoughts on the O line? Because I mean, I'm underwhelmed here. Maybe it's not time to panic. But
no, not yet. I mean, Armstead's a good left tackle. They've moved Pete, the number one pick a year ago, who played left tackle at Stanford. They moved him inside. So that's obviously a work in progress. But he's a huge man and a smart kid. I don't think there's worry yet. I mean, I don't think I don't think we can sit here and say, boy, their O line's going to be bad.
Right. Green Bay and San Fran, I think.
We finally saw Aaron Rodgers.
Yeah. I'm sick of watching my son's
Joe Callahan from Holy Spirit High School.
That's my son's Pop Warner quarterback. You know, handing the ball off to my son, a running back, and, you know, 10 years later, now he's handing it off to Eddie Lacy. I mean, it's surreal to me still. But by the way, he throws it nicely on the move. I like that about him. He's only 6'1", but we did see Rodgers. Lacy again, Greg, you know. If you're drafting in fantasy, I think you invest in Eddie Lacy based on what we've seen here and based on the situation, right?
I mean, look, he had that 21-yard run where he bounced. Lacy's looked good through the preseason, and I know he looks a lot thinner. So he's got a skill set. He's got a feature back skill set and build. So we'll see how Mike McCarthy wants to play it this year.
Yeah, he's going to get the ball, no question. I thought Randall Cobb looked good. And by the way, hearing good things about Jordy Nelson, Greg. He returned to practice. We're not going to see him in the preseason, but it sounds from talking to someone there that he's going to be ready. So I guess we just make that leap of faith because he is Jordy Nelson. And Jared Cook, I don't know if he's going to be consistent, but clearly, Greg, he is going to be an intriguing puzzle piece. This receiving core, big picture, and this is why I've had Aaron Rodgers over Cam until about a week ago. I did have to make the move, I'll say this. I like Rodgers better as a pick for fantasy because you can get him around after Cam. But clearly, Greg, to me right now, this receiving core looks significantly better. Of course, the Jordy element, but it's beyond that, significantly better than last year.
Well, the one thing Cook gives you is he can win against man coverage, and he can he had a 19-yarder on I think it might have been the first series, or maybe the second series, I can't remember. Rodgers only played two series. But he had a 19-yarder where he beat a linebacker on an angle route inside. I mean, I think they feel that when they get man, he can win against either linebackers or safeties with his movement ability.
And by the way, Devontae Adams dropped a touchdown from Callahan, and Callahan made a great throw there.
Yeah, he ran to his left and threw it back across the field, and it was a good throw.
Yep. Yeah. Hard to believe. Jared Aberderis, though, does catch a touchdown, and that's been the guy that I brought up on the podcast about 6 weeks ago, and he's intriguing. I mean, I don't think we're going to pick him up for fantasy, but we'll see if there's a guy who gets injured, and I think he could be a contributor. For the 49ers, you know, Carlos Hyde looked good, Greg, but then he suffered a concussion, so we still have issues there. They had to cut Bruce Ellington, or put him on IR, actually, not cut, but put him on IR, and they make the trade for Jeremy Curley. But, you know, other than Vance McDonald, Greg, I'm not feeling
this is right now a tough offense to watch, and I'm being totally honest. And I do 49ers radio, so on KNBR, so I have to watch them every week closely. And we'll see how it goes. That's about all I can say with this offense. Right, it will be Gabbert, obviously. They want to run the ball with their inside zone concept out of their spread, and if it's Hyde, he's going to get carries.
Yeah, no question. Miami, Atlanta, you know, what are your thoughts on where they are with Tannehill and, you know, Kenny Stills flashing a little bit banged up, but, you know, Devontae Parker continues to underwhelm. I'm really upset about that. Jordan Cameron has not been very good. I don't know. It's a mixed bag for me for Miami, and I don't think Arian Foster looks as good as others, but clearly he's a very good receiver, and he can help them in the passing game, no doubt.
You know, I could be totally wrong, John, but I get the impression watching the Dolphins in the preseason that Adam Gase is just trying to get Tannehill comfortable. Yeah. Like, in other words, he's not game planning. So, It's been a lot of quick rhythm stuff, just the way we talked about Tannehill, that you don't want him to get late in the down in the pocket. You want to get the ball out of his hands. I think he's really spent this probably training camp and preseason games just trying to develop some execution confidence, quick timing throws, get him comfortable. They have some weapons. I still think Devontae Parker, we don't know what he is yet, and I'm being totally honest. I don't think we know what he is yet.
No, we do know that we're left underwhelmed thus far. I can tell you that.
Yeah.
I mean, at least I am. But that's consistent with the tape, up and down.
I agree.
And as I said, I talk about it a lot. People, some people may get annoyed, but, I interviewed that kid at the combine, and it's like the worst interview I've ever done. I mean, he's looking down at the ground. It's like, you want to have a kid with a little bit more confidence about him, the way he carries himself. And, I think with him, that translates to the field because the tape's inconsistent.
Well, I think one question the tape raises, and this comes from the tape, is whether he can separate on vertical routes with the ball in the air. I mean, everybody assumes because he's 6'3", that he's going to make contested catches down the field. That, to me, is open to question right now.
Yeah, I just like to see a receiver a little bit more demonstrative, if you will. Like, Doug Baldwin is always pissed off. I interviewed Doug Baldwin one time. He got mad at me during the interview. I like that. I mean, the kid has got a lot of fire. Not Parker, though.
Well, everyone gets mad at you during the interviews, John, so that wasn't unique,
That's a good point. Atlanta, Greg, where are we with Matt Ryan? Let's say Matt Ryan starts out slow. It looks bad the
right
first 4 or 5 weeks. Do we then change the narrative and look at Matt Ryan as like
a declining player?
Yes. Tough one.
Maybe. I mean, that'd be hard. I mean, look, he threw the red zone interception this week. If you were sitting here with me watching the play, because I watched it 20 times and called in the matchup crew and then we evaluated it and we all had sort of different takes on it. I mean, because of where it was and the nature of the interception, it just looked horrible. But when you break down the nuances of the play, it's a little different. But clearly he was not as good last year as he was in previous years. You would think that a run game offense with play action, defining things would help him. So you're right. I think we have to see what he can do. The question now is at receiver. I mean, I think they're going to need to be a shot play offense to create and manufacture explosive plays. We know Julio is big time, but he's really the only individual weapon in the pass game. They do not have a tight end.
Yes, I agree, and I think that's why, by default, Mohamed Sanu is going to have some fantasy value this year. Finally, Greg, Seattle and Dallas. Let's start with Seattle. I thought their offense looked terrific. I think they're probably ready for prime time, and even without seeing much from Jimmy Graham, we saw the kid Paul Richardson make a play, and that's even more depth. I thought Christian Michael looked great as well. Good vibes here overall for Russell Wilson, even though we do still have those concerns about the O-line. I thought they looked very good in this one. Of course, that could be a function of Dallas, too, who doesn't rush the passer.
Yeah, I mean, I think their O-line is a question. I think probably a real strong positive for them this preseason was the play of Christian Michael, who looked very good every single week. It's my understanding they're going to start Bradley Soule at left tackle, and I think that's a question. There's no question that they rely and they count on Russell Wilson making improvisational, unstructured plays. They count on that. To them, that's not random. They count on that. And it's worked up to this point. We'll see if that can continue to work.
That was a 9-yard touchdown pass to Lockett, Greg. It was just running around, schoolyard.
Well, even the 27-yard throw to Lockett earlier was, a great unstructured play with a beautiful throw by Wilson. I mean, he's capable of that. He does that. Conventional wisdom is, boy, it's hard to live that way, but they count on that. They encourage that.
And the kid Lockett has picked right up. I mean, he's just walked right onto this roster, and he's in the mix big time. Let's go to Dallas finally. We'll start with Ezekiel Elliott. Now, this game was
looked
played
really good.
I mean, just ridiculously good, Greg. I mean, I love this kid. I mean, Where does he stack up in your mind over the last 10 years? I mean, to me, he's way up there.
I can't say that yet, John. I mean, I will say this, that he's got really good vision with easy cutting ability. He's a comfortable runner. It looks easy. He's got a very low center of gravity, which gives him natural power. We saw the speed to get to the perimeter, the easy speed. I mean, he got outside easily. So the skill set is clearly there. It's hard for me to say right now. I mean, in the last 10 years, I mean, you know, he's not as powerful and as violent as Adrian Peterson. You know, Peterson's an older back now. If we think back to Peterson early in his career, he had that explosive speed. I mean, you know, he's not quite that guy now, but, you know, that's a lot of carries in the NFL. I don't think Elliott is quite – let's put it this way. I don't think Elliott – if we're using Peterson as our standard, and he's probably the standard over the last 10 years, wouldn't you agree?
Absolutely.
Elliott is neither as explosive or as powerful as Adrian Peterson.
But he may be.
Which is not to say he's not a great runner, because Peterson is a pretty high level guy.
Yeah.
I mean, I had Leslie Frazier. I asked him at the combine a couple of years ago, because Leslie Frazier coached Peterson and played with Walter Payton, and I asked him who's a better runner, and he said, "Boy, that's a tough question." So when you're talking about Peterson, you're talking about one of the all-time great runners.
No doubt, no doubt. But you know what I'm enamored with in terms of Zeke Elliott, and maybe this is less prevalent with Tony Romo on the shelf here, but Zeke Elliott behind this line getting
– well, that's the thing.
Getting 28 carries against a bad defense, Greg. I mean, I picture Zeke Elliott behind this line in a game Dallas is leading in the second half, getting 28 carries, and I see him running for 200 yards.
And then, and by the way, he's going to have some of those games. I couldn't agree more.
Yeah.
The big question is durability. You know, it's easy to sit here and say what a great runner he is skill set-wise, and that's true and fair. But the NFL is a different animal when it comes to carrying 20-plus times every single week. And that's a whole mind – there's more to that than just skill set. So that's the only question that anyone would have. But he's really a good runner.
Finally, Greg, the Dak Prescott phenomenon. And look, I know you're not really in the prediction business. You're in the analysis and all that, the review, and you do the matchup stuff. But in terms of – it's not your bag. But it has to be my bag, Greg, because it does our listeners –
well, you have to predict what he's going to do now.
Right. It does our listeners no good if I say after everyone knows that Dak Prescott's going to do well – you know, it does them no good if I say, "Oh, this guy's legit in week four."
He's shown some things that get you excited.
Yeah.
Now, number one, when he's faced blitzed, he's recognized it immediately and gotten rid of the football to the right receiver. That's a positive. The touchdown he threw to Witten this week, I think, is a real positive, because the linebacker's back was turned, and when the linebacker's back is turned, he can't see the ball. And Witten made that – excuse me, and Prescott made that throw. I think that's a positive. So the poise and awareness he's played with, that's a positive. He had another throw this week which seemed like just a nothing completion to Bryce Butler for 16 yards, where he intuitively understood his route concept within the context of the coverage. That's a positive. Everything's been positive. So what does that mean for the regular season? No one can really answer that, John, but I don't think he's going to go out there and all of a sudden look flustered and unaware. You know, it doesn't mean there aren't going to be plays where he doesn't have a clue, because obviously things will be different, but I don't think he's all of a sudden going to look like he doesn't belong.
He is a two-time first team all SEC quarterback. He's a fourth round pick, though, but why can't he have the same level of success that Jameis Winston and Marcus Mariota had last year, just because they're number one picks? You know, to me, it doesn't really matter. I think that Dak Prescott is going to produce and do well.
He's also on a team that obviously is going to run the ball and will run the ball well. You know, there's not going to be many weeks, I would imagine, where the Cowboys don't have some success running the ball. That's a relative term, of course. They're not going to rush for 250 every week. But this team is going to run the ball and be good at it.
Another outstanding podcast, Greg. This has been a really good summer for the new podcast. Your content has been terrific as always. Next week, we'll convene on Thursday morning and preview week one. You ready?
I more than I could ever say, John, believe me, I'm finishing up a couple of preseason sides of the ball today, and I just can't wait to see regular season tape.
And we can't wait to get your thoughts on week one, which we'll do next week on the FantasyGuru.com matchup podcast, which kicks off week one in 1 week. And that'll wrap it up for Greg Cosell. I'm John Hansen. Good luck in your drafts, and check us out at fantasyguru.com if you have not yet subscribed. If you are a subscriber, we're going to be working Friday, Saturday over the weekend. Do the final projection update on Monday for those late drafts. And we're going to do a projection update for those wondering on Friday as well. That'll wrap it up. We will talk to you next time on the Fantasy Guru podcast.
Stay tuned for 60-second AP News headlines.
AP Update, I'm Tim McGuire. Hillary Clinton is demanding once again that Donald Trump release his tax returns. To reporters writing on her campaign plane, Clinton accuses Trump of a number of questionable business deals over the years.
The list goes on and on. The scams, the frauds, the questionable relationships, the business activities that have stiffed workers, refused to pay small businesses.
Clinton is to be at a rally in Tampa this afternoon. Trump, for his part, is campaigning today in Virginia and North Carolina. AP White House correspondent Julie Pace reports Trump has been able to dial back the off-the-cuff remarks.
He likes to go in front of these big crowds and be more freewheeling and play off of their energy. Now he's going out there with teleprompters and with scripted remarks, and it really is a testament to his campaign leadership that they've gotten him to a point where he's willing to do this for at least a couple of weeks.
AP Update, I'm Tim McGuire.